And we're live with episode number 321 of Absolute AppSec. I'm Ken Johnson at CK Tricky on social media, joined by my co-host Seth Law at Seth Law on social media. Seth, say hi.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. I'm excited to be here, as always. We have a few things to talk about. It's been a few weeks since Ken's been on. Last week, Stefan joined me. Thanks again to Stefan for co-hosting. We dove into a few different topics. We have a few articles that we wanted to go on today to talk about, mainly Crocs and Socks style, like basic AppSec stuff. But first up, I did want to address the fact that we are going to be offering Harnessing LLMs, so Agentic AppSec, Harnessing LLMs, as we have renamed the course, at DEF CON in Las Vegas. That is available. You can sign up for early bird pricing on training there. We also have the four-day course of combined secure code review and Harnessing LLMs that is being offered at Black Hat, also in Las Vegas. It's the 4 days before. And will be a deep dive. That one is a little bit in flux for Ken and I, just as, like secure code review, manual secure code review feels like a, what do I say, Ken? Feels like a little bit of a dead practice at this point, the way that everyone is utilizing other tools. And so it's a question of how we want to address that and how we want to take it forward and move it forward, right? Yeah, Crocs and Socks, right? Great winter holiday version. Yeah, Crocs and Socks, though. So there's those two trainings that are coming up. I will also be at B-Sides Vancouver, not this weekend, but in 2 weeks. Part of my team is putting on a workshop, like an AppSec workshop. And we'll be speaking with Justin, another member of my team, on user enumeration and enumeration flaws that we're still seeing. So if you are going to be in Vancouver, please let me know. We'd love to see you. We'd love to hang out. Otherwise, what does your travel schedule look like, Ken? What are you up to?
I was going to actually mention, since you mentioned B-Sides Vancouver, B-Sides Calgary, Justin Collins. So if you don't know, Justin Collins was the creator of Breakman, and I think a lot of people listening to this podcast know what Breakman is. But yeah, creator of Breakman, it's an open source Ruby on Rails application, static application security testing tool, SAST. And anyways, he built it, very smart guy, former CISO of Gusto, and he's currently on our team, as like our head AI research person or something along those lines. I forget the exact title we agreed on. I'm saying that all to say this dude is bad. He is, in a good way. He's awesome. He's a bad man. So if you want to pick his brain, if you want to ask him questions, whether it's about deterministic SAST, whether it's about how that works with the new agentic landscape or just anything in general, he'll be there. It's May 25th and 26th. He'll be hanging out. Go pester him, tell him I sent you. So then I don't have anything scheduled. Thank God. I don't have anything scheduled for going on the road. I can't take any more travel right now. I mean, my body, I keep doing that thing. Like you talked about when we were after Singapore, you were mentioning, actually, I think it was maybe even during Singapore, training, there were times where you're like, oh, your body's like awake and then it's asleep. And then it's like, yeah, that really just hit me hard as hell is this week where I'm like, I don't know, man. It's like, I mean, I think it was last night. It was like 6:30 or 7 PM. And I was like, I'm just going to sit down. I sat down with a crossword puzzle. I just sat on the couch and I kept pestering my son who knows things that I don't know, asking him questions. And next thing I know, it's like, I just like, I'm like an old man, like my glasses are like here, I got a crossword, it's like 7:30 at night, I'm just passed out, dying. It's just this travel stuff, I'm over it. It's like, we were hanging out with Cole and he's just telling, this is the other fun part about traveling a lot. Everybody used to tell you how bad you look and how worried they are about you. It's like, yeah, well, I am too, man. This is a lot. Just need sleep. That's all.
Sleep. I just need sleep. I need some recovery time. Yeah. Recovery time is nice. It's not always available when we decide, oh yeah, we're going to do back-to-back, you know, travel weeks, and all of a sudden it's been 2 months and you've been on the road every week or every other week, and yeah, it adds up, right? Like no one really, I mean, we are talking about it and some people do, but a lot of times it's just part and parcel for startups and consulting firms that the travel is a given. The other thing that people don't realize is, you know, especially in a training environment or something like that, when you show up, you have to be ready to go, right? There's no one else. And thankfully, I mean, this is one of the reasons why we train in pairs, is because inevitably somebody is going to have a down day or a down period, is going to need a minute to recover, right? Like, you've got to be able to switch off and you've got to be able to switch on, because most of the topics that we're teaching about are incredibly technical, and we're running into edge cases. Students ask about edge cases. That's part of the reason that they are there, and you've got to be able to think on your feet quickly. So being able to respond to that sort of technical ask is not an easy, I mean,
well, it, yeah, it, to yeah, go it's from not that, second you're also yeah. like, because if you're there, if you're us and you're doing that, but also usually like there's nighttime things. So like we'll meet with customers or, you know, just network with people. And then usually there's the conference side of it. So maybe we have a talk, maybe we have a booth, maybe we have both of those things. That's happened to me quite a bit. And I know you, and it's like, okay, so we've got the booth, we've got speaking, we've got training. And then, you know, I still have a day job. So I got to keep up with being a CTO and co-founder, and you still run a consultancy. So yeah, it's like, I don't know. I'm just here. I'll dovetail it. If you're worried, don't worry. Just need sleep and got some sleep. So be all right.
Yeah. It's going to be okay.
Don't be worried.
So, but with that, like before the podcast, and as I'm digging through all of the articles over the past, you know, couple of weeks, the stuff that Ken and I haven't talked about yet, one of the things that I'm noticing, you know, number one is this, you know, the sheer number of exploits, the sheer number of third-party dependency attacks, the sheer number of, you know, new tools that are popping out because of AI, right? Let's be honest, means that there is a lot of noise that's out there. Right? It used to be that the research topics as they were popping up, or even some of the papers would, they'd get a lot more attention, or the news cycle would last a little bit longer. So like in a week, we might be able to discover a couple of tools or whatever it is. And I'm even seeing this in places like TLDRSec with Clint, where there's more like kind of CVE style stuff that's popping into that, or specific exploits, because that's the research topic that's grabbing the most attention when he's doing his comb through what's happened in the last couple of weeks. I have this like, I kind of want to take a step back, right? We are absolute AppSec. That's what we founded the podcast on, was to talk about application security topics and the Crocs and Socks and people getting into the industry and, you know, helping out the practitioners that are currently doing application security in whatever, or ProdSec in whatever organization that they're in. And part of this is going to take a little bit, at least on my part, of finding those articles and topics that do address that niche, as opposed to all the AI noise that's out there right now. I imagine the AI noise is going to continue for a while, but eventually will start to taper down as people get more, you know, regular use with it and realize that it's not quite the panacea that they expect it to be. But with that, the articles that I've got today are not necessarily AI related, right? But before we jump into that, you know, where do you feel that this is going, right? Like, this kind of harkens back to the, you know, the future of AppSec panel that we had, I was pretty nihilistic, right? Like, honestly, about tools and the, you know, where things are actually going. You know, part of that was on purpose because we were on a panel trying to like at least drum up a little bit of, you know, contention, shall we say. But yeah. But how do you feel like, where do you feel like AppSec practitioners go, right? Like, yes, we know AI is a thing. We know that that's a new tool. But where does a practitioner actually go with application security now?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote up an article on this. It should be coming out today or tomorrow on TriRun's blog. So I'll probably post that in the maybe the random channel of our Slack workspace when it comes out. Because I did. I thought of, like, after that panel, I thought of, like, what will our job look like, right? And so I did a little bit of reading because I had questions about, like, you know, for instance, with car manufacturers, with Amazon, and I'm pointing at these two. I'm just kind of pointing at these two workplaces as, like, they're mature, have been doing factory level, you know, building things basically for decades and decades. They have, I guess what I'm trying to say is they have the experience. They're doing it the best. They understand logistics at a level that none of us, including listeners and us of this podcast, really understand. So they're kind of the shining examples in my mind of where you would have a replacement of labor in favor of autonomous delivery, right? Meaning, get rid of the humans, let robots do everything, let automation do everything. But so I was kind of looking into it. I was like, well, does Amazon and do any car manufacturers have completely 100% human beings don't exist, completely hands off, you know, warehouses and manufacturing plants? The answer is no, absolutely not. None of them. Now, they get as near as they can to being fully autonomous, but that's really on the labor side of things. So the article I write kind of talks about this a little bit more in depth, but basically the labor part is replaced, or in our case, like the person line by line writing code or the person line by line reviewing code. Those days, that labor very likely looks like it's going away, but they still have needs, right? They have safety controls. They need a human being to problem solve in terms of, like, if things go off the rails, they need a human being to have that human being creativity and intuition and experience and wisdom to come in and help solve the problem. You know, obviously there's making sure they're performing correctly. So you could think of an analogy for that as, you know, hey, are we drifting from good on our analysis? Are we missing things? Are we whatever, right? Like if we're missing things or we're having issues or whatever, there's got to be someone that comes in and helps fix and corrects that. And that's another reason why they have human beings. So I started to dial back, like, where's the fully autonomous bit and where's the human being bit? And I guess what I'm trying to say is, yes, I think the labor part goes away. So if your job is nothing more than clicking start on a scan and throwing the results over to with nothing else involved, right? Click start, get a thing, give it to somebody else. Well, yeah, that's an obvious. Why does that even exist? To be honestly, why does that exist today anyways, right? Like, why would that? That should be a genuine question if you're a business. That costs money for that person. Anyways, so clearly there are things like that that go away. I think like I said, the line by line style labor goes away. There's probably just a lot of things that you don't have to do. But I think it shifts to a world in which you're managing your work, your effectively your security agentic workforce or your fleet of agentic workers. And maybe SRE does the same with their fleet of agentic workers, and software engineers do the same with their fleet of agentic autonomous workers. And I could even see there being some product or project manager agentic workflows involved here, where they're deciding based off of different metrics and synthesizing a lot of data, you know, what features and what tech debt and what things should be prioritized in what order as well. And I'm saying all this because Yeah, of course the labor should go away. That makes sense. Like we're automating for a factory floor, basically. That's what we're going to become. Or just try. That's all we really have ever tried to strive for is creating products that beat out our competitors and deliver value to customers. That's just business 101. That's a factory floor. It's just building something and delivering it with high quality. So with all that in mind, I think you still will see some level of a generalist driving maybe all or, you know, managing all activities. But yeah, I think that's where I see the world going. Do you concur, or is there overlap in your thinking about where AppSec goes? Do you want to talk about like where you think software security goes? Like where, like, yeah, curious.
Yeah, I mean, part of this was the question that we had related to juniors, right? Like this is very near and dear to my, you know, heart with, you know, people getting into the industry and part of just people coming into Absolute AppSec and engaging with us as a podcast or us as people that are, you know, a little bit more out there. Is where the basics actually go, right? And I like your analogy with car manufacturing and some of these other industries where we've seen industrialization actually happen, and that is the pattern that we're seeing in software security, in software engineering right now, is that it's going to change. And we have to understand what's actually going into it and be aware that that's going to be the case. And so like, you know, like it goes back to how do we teach people coming into the industry what they need to know in order to troubleshoot, right? In order to step into those cases where the automation goes wrong. So where are the basics? What is it that someone actually needs to know to be an application security person in 6 months, 12 months, 2 years, 5 years that differs from what we taught people 5 years ago? I think my argument is going to be that not a lot actually changes. From a basics perspective, security basics, like where we've already always distilled things down to authentication, you know, to AAA, right? Like to the Crocs and Socks, that does not change. The change is in the implementation. The change is in the tools that we use to actually help us quickly identify what's going on and where problems exist and the agents that are the workflows that we've created around that, that all changes. But that's happened time and time again with the rise of the traditional SAST and DAST tooling to SCA to everything else that's in there. The, you know, our understanding of the principles of security have not changed. I'm gonna pull out that article from the WHERE report from what 1974 or whatever it is, right? Like trying to secure internet connected systems, or interconnected systems, because the internet didn't exist back then. But all of the problems that they pull out there and they identify are the problems that we still struggle with today. So I don't think the basics change. I think the tools change and how we actually utilize those tools and what we raise to the surface. But if we don't have that basic understanding of what authentication and authorization and auditing and confidentiality and integrity and availability, what that all looks like, we're not, as an AppSec industry, going to be able to help software security. We're not going to be able to identify things quickly. Even if we put that all into an agent, we see what actually happens and we see things go off the rails.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But at the same time, I would say this, like, and I'm going to rant a little bit. I do like your image, by the way, the monkey.
The monkey.
For the listeners, he put up when I said, just click a button that says start scan through a report over the wall. He literally had an image of a monkey in a data center doing just that. So kudos to Seth on the pool. But I just want to say, because this could, I actually, oh man, so weird that you bring this up, because I actually put this into the blog article that I'm mentioning. So I might as well just continue expanding on. And in that blog post, I said, well, I could really go off on a tangent around education. So I'm going to not do that, but I am going to have a little mini tangent. I think education has been done so poorly for so long, and we've just accepted it. I mean, like the example I use in the blog post is like, you know, most built not architects for software, like true infrastructure architects. They learn all of these crazy things that are relatively unimportant to their jobs. And guess what they don't learn? They don't even learn how to use CAD. That's not part of the core curriculum. Like, that, how true is that of software security as well, right? We learn like, basics of programming in like Java, like what a class is, or it's just not bad. I mean, Bobby mentions like having programming languages like a core competency, great. But I would say that the things that they have, even on the programming side in school, like from what people have told me, it's trash. And if you look at like a cybersecurity degree, how many of them are doing this? Learning only the things that are required for their job, which would take 4 years to get up to speed on, which is like everything from networking fundamentals to programming fundamentals to operating system fundamentals to whatever. And then on top of that, it's like, cool, you know, all these like sometimes esoteric bits of data, sometimes somewhat helpful bits of data for sure. But you have no, like, even if that's all we did, and that would actually be pretty decent, even after 4 years, you still wouldn't have the skills that you need. No, I think what, and this is something I think our training does that I will brag about, is that where we really shine is we give small bits of very purposeful, some things are hand wavy. You can't teach people everything, but you can get right into it and say like, here's a purpose of this thing that you're going to do. Here's the thing that you're going to do. Here's the purpose behind it. Now let's talk about some ways to achieve it. And then let's have you do an exercise. And let's go on to the second level of that. And that exercise is going to build on the last exercise, and then so on and so forth. Like, I enjoy that level of education where it's very practical. It's very driven towards a specific goal. And when you walk away from it, you should be able to go do your job. But let's be honest, that is not education in any form today. I don't see it anywhere. I don't see anybody like basically teaching people the way I would want them to be taught. So first of all, that's a huge problem. So that's my mini rant. It's just education sucks in general. It doesn't like teach you the things you need for a job. It gives you a piece of paper that tells people that you can show up and you can like meet the minimum requirements and whatever. So, all right. Aside, if we were gonna talk about how to educate people, well, like, what is the reality of education once you're out of that academic thing, right? Well, the truth is, like, I don't know about you, but I think you pretty much learn the bulk of what you're gonna learn on the job. Like, I do. I think you learn through doing. Now, what you're doing is going to be the thing that changes. And so that's where I see it. I guess what I'm trying to say is, by wrapping this all up, you're always going to learn the fundamentals. It's probably always going to be something that's in the picture, whether it's programming or networking, whatever. But I think, like, after you move on, in today's world, you would say, okay, well, maybe I'm going to do dynamic testing. So I'm going to get really into the weeds on burp and how web apps work and how runtime environment fuzzing looks, and what are the tips and tricks, and what are the different vuln classes that are most likely something I could even find with Dast. Okay, cool. Now, maybe 2 years later, I'm pretty proficient with Dast, maybe a few years, whatever it takes for you. Cool. Maybe you move on to, I'm going to learn threat modeling and everything about threat modeling, right? That's how today's world kind of works. Okay. I think in a future world, you're not doing Dast yourself. You're not doing threat modeling yourself. You're not doing any of those things. I think what you're actually doing is making sure that the systems that are doing those things are doing them correctly. So what you're going to learn is how to manage systems that are doing those tasks. So we've already gotten pretty abstracted away from the core of computer science to where we are at today. And I just think they're going to bring that to the next level of abstraction. And that's what they're going to be learning, is like, how do I manage these systems and, you know, fix them, evaluate them, et cetera.
Well, and I think that's what you and I are already experiencing on both like the code and the dynamic side of AppSec nowadays, right? Like, what it looks like in 2026 is me manipulating agents to go out and do things, as opposed to, hey, I've got a, you know, burp request and response, or I'm like looking through an IE, you know, searching by myself for specific, components, functions, and patterns, now I have a system that's doing a lot of that for me. And it is, it does feel like a superpower, right? Like, you know, because we have been stuck in the manual process for so long. So this is traditional industrialization, just in knowledge work as opposed to physical labor. And you know, and so I'm with you there, but I don't think those basics go away. I don't know if I agree with you completely on like the state of education. I think there's been an overabundance of focus on university education, specifically computer science and computer engineering, when those are both really theoretical degrees. I think most jobs that you get after you come out of computer science are practical. And so learning the basics and the algorithms that go in and how to do, you know, red, black tree sorts and right, like all sorts of different things, they have their place, but I don't think that's necessarily what the knowledge workers needed as they were moving into computer engineering or like being software engineers or software architects, because there wasn't many people that are designing operating systems nowadays, right? Like that's just not something that is a huge need for a financial organization or a healthcare company or a tech startup. They just aren't necessarily designing operating systems. So teaching people how to do that, yes, there's some basics that are great about that, but it is a very theoretical education that you're getting out of most university educations. A lot of like the technology degrees or other like really focused ones were more practical than that, right? Like, oh, go learn, you know, Rust or Python, or at least like a newer modern language in some of these places. But they've always struggled with being, you know, 12 months to 2 to 3 years behind where industry actually is. So it's really hard to go step into get a degree from a technical college or whatever it is and have them teach you, you know, Windows 2003 when like something else is, yeah, there's newer versions that are out there, how to manipulate Word when everyone's using Google or just like they've just been behind. I don't know how to actually like level that up, because that's always been, okay, what does a junior actually do for the first couple of years? They figure out how to integrate with modern technologies and they have to come up to speed very quickly. So it's almost like learning to learn is what you get out of a university or a technical college degree, as opposed to practical skills in a lot of cases. That doesn't mean you don't utilize some of those things, but it, you know, I think that, you know, moving forward, the need for a university education in like the theoretical aspects of computer science is actually going to decrease. So I guess I do agree with you there. We need more practical on that, you know, hands-on experience.
So I actually and I disagree. So I actually like on that last point, I actually think,
yeah,
For the masses, it will become less important. But for some people, it's going to be really, really important to really understand the. And I think math as a curriculum item will become fairly important as well for a select group of people. And I think, yeah, it won't be. But I'll agree. I'll concede that I think, yeah, on the whole, you're going to see like that not be super important for most people. I mean, I will say there's value in learning how to learn. Definitely. Like I think, you know, that's something we even talk about in our original manual secure code review course, is that we're there to teach you how to learn, literally how to learn. Like you are going to figure out what things you have to go and do research on, you know, how, like what parts of an application deserve the time spent to go look at documentation to flesh out, you know, how do you handle input, or how, what are your security config files, or what are your unsafe ORM functions and all that stuff. So yeah, cool. Learn how to learn. Here's the problem, Seth. Here's the problem. I dealt and interviewed with a lot of people coming out of school, and I don't think that they learned how to learn, for one. Two, What pisses me off is when you have a cybersecurity degree, you don't know who HD Moore is or Metasploit. If you don't know that and you have a cybersecurity degree, it's going to get under my skin a little bit. And it definitely does. I'm like, what are you talking about? How can you have a cybersecurity degree? You don't know what Metasploit is for, I mean, come on. Right. So like, no, I would say you have a view, and that's fair, of where people are when they come out of those schools. And my view is they come out of there not knowing how to run tools, don't really understand, frankly. And I'm not, this is painting with broad strokes. I'm referring to people that do nothing outside of just go to the class. Cause like, let's be honest, we've met some people, like you mentioned, I think a month ago or so, you mentioned some of the kids we had met as part of Jerry Gamblin's sponsorship out there in Scotland. And yeah, like they're not going to class and that's it. They're living and breathing. Like they're doing all the CTFs, they're doing all the projects, they're building all the things, they're competing in everything. Like, no, that's of course they're going to be successful. They're going to be great. They're great now, right? Can be even greater. But if it's just that, just like, maybe that's the problem. Maybe just expecting to just consume, you know, people talking at you all day long and like, you know, memorizing and filling out, you know, test answers is like the real problem. I don't know, but there is a problem.
I mean, attention spans have decreased. We're training people that, you know, anything can be taught in, you know, less than 3 minute snippets of video, right? Like that is, you know, that are addictive. And that when you're interested in it, the algorithm will automatically feed you that. So expecting someone to go sit in a class and listen to, you know, a teacher for an hour to speak about one topic and go in depth is becoming a huge ask. I think part of what we're seeing is this, I like Cory Doctorow's term, like enshittification of education, right? Like, you know, we're slowly dumbing things down to meet where people are actually at because people don't read anymore, right? Like people don't do deep dives into topics. You do have a core, you have, and again, broad strokes, right? I saw Bobby's comment and I lost my thread there. But I'm painting broad strokes definitely of how people interact with technology and how we're training them to learn. But it's very difficult to get them to change once they have discovered the easy way out, right? Like the, man, if I can't learn something in 3 minutes, right? Like I've moved on. My brain is already like looking for that next dopamine hit. I'm going to swipe. I'm going to, you know, go to the next video to actually see if there's something more interesting for me. And we've all been through that, right? Like we know how addictive that can actually be. Oh, it's no worry, Bobby. We made it back there. I did like one of the things that he called out earlier on was, the depth necessary to assess the complex systems being created today is only increasing. And so we've got this this strange dichotomy going on that we're teaching people to use systems and we're utilizing them as consumers and not going in depth, but to be able to troubleshoot and dig through the layers of abstraction that are causing problems with agents, with code, with hardware that exists, we require people to have even more knowledge of how those systems are interacting, which we don't have. And I would almost argue that we almost don't understand. Yes, we don't understand, right? Like how an LLM actually makes the connections that it makes, right? Like we understand it on a surface level in very, very basic scenarios. But the way that we like train on that and then actually grow those systems, it is, we have a very, very rudimentary understanding. So when things go wrong, we're tweaking inputs, we're tweaking outputs, but we don't actually have the capability to tweak the internals of that very well.
Think about this. If you build a function or you build whatever thing and you troubleshoot and you had to go through like the pains of making it work and you're like, I did it by hand, it's whatever. It's like, all right, you remember that code. Someone's like, oh, this thing's happening. That's like, man, It's like, oh yeah. Like, I know why that's happening because I did this and this was a trade-off here and blah, 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 blah. That's on a smaller scale. It's like just a chunk of a code. Now just like imagine, okay, AI wrote it for you right there. Like right there, just AI wrote it for you and someone asked you a question like, hey, this thing's going wrong. Like there's two different worlds there. There's one where I can like literally think, visualize, like, oh, okay, I under- oh yeah, actually probably this. There's another one where I'm like, I don't know. No idea. Now think about that architecturally, okay? Like at a big level where there's been tons of changes, different services connected to each other, and like not a single person. You want to talk about knowledge diffusion, like talk like at that scale, nobody knows what's going on and what's happening. So troubleshooting can get very murky. And I can tell you, like, you know, it's yesterday, if you're like banking on just AI to do it, yesterday I was dealing with Claude and Opus. I think it was even 4.6 or 4.7. I can't remember. And it was just like a React component. And it just, from a troubleshooting perspective, I just had to say, screw it. I'm going to manually dig in on this. Yep. So again, that's a point piece of code. That's a small piece of code. It's a one, you know, again, if we're talking about at a bigger level, like I definitely see like an architecture apocalypse or something coming. I just agree with Bobby. That's how I'm going to dovetail that.
Well, I mean, to that point, like, yeah, so we're playing with more dynamic stuff, right? Like on my side with Surveyor and building out additional kind of like test beds and test applications that we can actually do things against. So we've been doing a lot of vibe coding of applications. And so I've got like a next version of VTM, Next.js version that I've had, you know, Claude and Quinn build out for me. And even just getting the thing running in like a production environment, utilizing those systems, even though it was a requirement up front, has been just a painful process, right? I posted you a small snippet of what we discovered. But it has to do with, right, like how things are being rendered by React. And there was a link component that was the login button or the log out button, right? And it had just created that, thrown it in there. And then every time that React loaded that page, the dashboard page, it saw that link. It did a precursor call to log out and log everyone out every single time that they were trying to browse or after they'd log into the application, right? Like you couldn't authenticate and it didn't catch it, right? Like it's that sort of stuff that just happens over and over again with these vibe coded applications. I mean, I know you guys have discovered that as well as you've been creating different apps and, you know, putting things into place. And that's even with the best designed like requirements and phases, and you've planned out how to actually do X, Y, and Z and maintain, you know, capability, functionality with the applications themselves. And you've got, even with the best laid plans, best laid instructions, they make mistakes. And I also don't understand, like, we expect agents to not make mistakes when people make mistakes, right?
No, they will. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, that's why I'm saying, like, I really do believe that's going to be our job. Like, that's going to be our job, is making sure these systems operate correctly. Our workforce, basically. I consider them to just basically be your employees. And so,
yeah,
I'm not going to talk about too much about AI today, but I don't think that was the point of this conversation. The point of the conversation was more just like, where as a junior, do you like see, you know, what do you have to,
what do you need to go learn? Yeah.
I think, yes, still need to know fundamentals. Like I'd still be annoyed if somebody doesn't understand what, like, you know, what a loopback IP address is, right? I'd be annoyed if you didn't know that. I think there's some things where it's like, so networking, definitely some level of programming knowledge of some kind. I don't think you have to be an expert. I definitely entered into AppSec not a programming expert. I could script. I spent a few years getting okay at scripting, right? That's it. I wouldn't say like, I pretty much sucked at, today I probably still suck at true programming. I know how to read code, I know how to write code, and I think that's a skill you're gonna need. But I don't know, man, I'm not sure that you need to know how, like, I'll make a statement. I don't know that you need to learn how to use Burp. I don't know. I really don't know. Like, yeah. Meaning if you're a freshman right now, in 3 years when you get out of college, will you be running Burp at any of your jobs? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it probably depends on how Burp actually updates their software to be utilized with agents, right? Like, and if they can get away from the, you know, pure deterministic nature of that tool. That was one of the predictions that I made on the panel was, okay, you know, there's, you know, 20, 25 vendors that were there, right? Like, I realistically see a world in 3 to 5 years where 80% of them are probably gone or changed in some form, right? Like,
when you said that, by the way, can I just point out that cracked me up when you said that on stage. He goes, like, for everyone listening, we're on this panel. It's a huge room. There's a lot of people there. And definitely some of the vendors were there. I mean, I know one of the vendors there. So I was on panel. I was on the stage with him, and I had a booth there. And he said, yeah, did you guys go down to the vendor hall? They're like, yeah, we've done the vendor hall. And like, you look around. He's like, yeah, like 90% of those companies won't exist in another whatever, whatever. I was like, ooh, okay. That's one way to start off the day.
I mean, they won't exist. I guess I should have predicated it, but it sounds better with it just won't exist. But they won't exist in their current form, right? Like, we, you know, sure. And that's probably a better way to a more diplomatic way to go at it, right?
Yeah, well, I've been trying to explain it. I don't see any world in which you like kick off a manual scan of your entire repo, or you do this, that. It's like the pace is just going to be, no, it just needs to do that. It just needs to do it. And honestly, it probably just needs to like validate on its own, triage, open triage, however it happens, help developers remediate. All that basically needs to be like hands off in the new world. So I do think, like, yeah, if you're some big bulky tool that takes a lot of setup and costs a lot of money and requires a person to, like, whatever your tool is, to like click buttons and configure things, it's like, all right, well,
yeah, it's gonna change.
Yeah, that's not going to work.
Yeah. All right. With that said, I did post a link to the Ware report if you've never read that before. I always hearken, it's 1967, right? Like, and I think it came out, it was declassified in 1975. But it's kind of the seminal work, Security Controls for Computer Systems. And the stuff that they go into there are the basics that I'm talking about, right? Like, And I know I'm hearkening back to an era even before I was involved, right? But it's similar to going back to Aleph One's paper on smashing the stack, right? Like, those basics inform what we do today. And someone coming out of a CS degree, or if they're getting a cybersecurity degree, should probably be aware of both of those and what the history actually is, because that is how exploits are actually like implemented. That is the basics of how security systems are protected. And I am consistently surprised that people don't actually step to that level, right? And part of this just is, you know, a pure education play on what people are being taught, especially from a security perspective. But I struggled with this as a CS major, right? Like, taking the one computer security course, and they were, you know, they're teaching us how to like implement DES and triple DES, right? Granted, this was, you know, early 2000s, and that was still somewhat relevant, or late 90s, right? Because AES was still in proposal and whatever, right? But I was like, this isn't security. This isn't what I'm seeing in my day to day as people are attacking. You had the Morris worm. You had other like worms and Trojan horses going around. And that was what was really like interesting from a computer security perspective. Instead, all it was an encryption, how to implement encryption course. So like, education's always going to suffer in that way, I guess, is where I'm going there. And we've got to get better at it, right? Like, we've got to get better at educating, but also being able to cut through the noise and cut through the abstraction layers down to those basics. So that all leads to, I mean,
you know, actually, I don't mean to cut you off, but something that I think is actually really important to mention is that Ben Gittins gave that talk last week for the Clutch event. I'm not kidding you when I say, I think everything that he talked about in that talk, that's what you learn. If you're like, I'm a junior, I'm trying to, you know what you do? You go and you do, you listen to a talk like his, you try and use his tools, you figure out and reverse from that, like how he built it, because that's going to teach you everything that you're going to need to know for the future world that you're going to live in. That's the honest truth. And by the way, great job, Ben, who he released, I think three or four, maybe four tools, I think at least, right? Like Quokka and like a bunch of other Australian terms I should know better and don't. But anyways, cool stuff. Actually, do you have, I wonder if we have a link to his talk. I'm trying to get my keyboard to link.
I don't even know if he did. Let me see. Quokka. I'm trying to see if I know I went to.
We'll try and find it and post this on Slack later, or maybe get Ben to do it. But
here's the, I don't have the talk, but I do have the GitHub. I'll post that. So Quokka specifically, right? He had a few different tools that he released, but it's that DiffSec, right? So Quokka is LM assisted code review, right? Like, so he built his own little, you know, tool to do that. Reverie, the persistent memory stuff becomes a little bit, that is super interesting, right? Like how to actually share memory across agents. I've seen multiple different tools coming out that do something similar to that, but it was good stuff, right? And this also goes back to, you know, it used to be that I just would I'd give juniors basically a license to Burp Suite Professional, right? Say, go learn how to use this. And that's shifted. We still give them access to Burp because we use that on a day-to-day basis, but that has shifted to, hey, here is a license to Cloud Code. Go learn how to use that, right? And again, it's about the basics, right? It's like, how do you manipulate and use the tools that are available to you to identify things in code, in running applications, in application security? But that also presupposes that you realize what security principles and security controls need to exist. That's not going away. As much as you put that into a Claude skill or something else, it's not going away. You still need to know the basics of AAA. You still need to know the CIA triad. You need to know what technologies exist in the components that you're trying to protect.
Well, you do need to know those things. I did read somebody, I want to say, oh man, somebody on LinkedIn was like, yeah, we've been having, who wrote, they're saying, I don't know if you saw this, that they've been having candidates who, like, they can watch their eyes. I was like, well, don't do that. I mean, you know, so whatever you do, just don't aspire to not do that on a interview. That'd be the answer. It's
not very hard. I mean, it, you know, you can serve as an accelerator, but there is something to be said about spending more than 3 minutes on a topic to learn about it. I do have a couple of articles. We have been going, dude, I don't know what happens to you and I when we get on soapboxes.
Right? We literally got on none of the topics that we had planned. I'm sorry. I saw but Daniel and Cole, who it's definitely not time for them to be awake right now in Australia.
They're dealing with jet lag. Yeah.
A different life. Are we witnessing the birth of magic where incantation gives you outcomes without having to understand the underlying systems of the world? Well, no, that's what I've been trying to say, is that it's not magic, it's abstractions, right? And so, like, although that is hilarious, thank you, Daniel, that is funny. I'm sure, yes. I will say, though, that, yeah, like, that's really all I've been trying to say, and I think to some degree, Seth, you too, is that there's just abstractions from, you're just abstracted from a lot. That's really what it comes down to. And you're going to be trained and have to learn on those abstractions. So you know, whereas yeah. like going back to my manufacturing analogy, it's like, yeah, maybe you're not learning the actual title of the article is something along the lines of no more screws. And, you know, back in the day, we used to like people would, when they would manufacture things, they would actually build their own screws. Obviously, we realized like this is a waste of time. We need to industrialize, operationalize, do this at scale. Let's not worry about making our own screws. That's kind of the thing, is like there's little nuanced little things that you can get really in the weeds on and really learn. And that may come in handy, maybe. But on the whole, we got away from that, right? We operationalized things. We turned into like fully autonomous manufacturing shops. We don't forget even worrying about screws. We don't even worry about, you know, die casts and all the things that are, you know, being built inside of those, or the processes being used to build all those things. We don't even think about those things. All we think about are, were those processes followed? Did the conveyor belt run in the right order? Is QA working? Are these machines like within their, you know, are the machines themselves doing the labor? Are they within the correct parameters? You know, are they following the correct safety protocols? Are we doing proper maintenance on those things? Are we evaluating their performance correctly? And a bunch of millions of other things. And that's how abstraction looks. It doesn't look like, you know, your work's dumber or like whatever. It's like, no, it's just like the thing I care about is it's different.
Yeah. I mean, and to Daniel's point on that, right? Like it is more worried about like inputs to outputs rather than what the nuts and bolts are inside of it that are actually putting the software together. It's going to get better. But there is a need to understand the nuts and bolts and how things are actually constructed in order to troubleshoot. And that's what's not going away. We have to understand how it's built in order to give the proper instructions to get the results that we want. So like one of the articles that I had was on, what was it? Passkeys, right? Like, and part of the reason that I like this, and maybe we can talk about one before we split, or do you need to go here?
I don't have to go right now.
Okay. Okay. So there is one article. It's called Passwords Suck. We've talked about this for years. Everyone knows passwords suck. Can passkeys replace them? And Karakor, this is a very common refrain that we've had over the past few years is, you know, can you actually utilize something else, right? Hack credentials are a thing. Actually, authenticating nowadays to, you know, every application under the sun is becoming a problem. The one thing that I liked here was the explanation of how passkeys actually work. Because everybody's like, well, you've got a passkey, you created one. And it's just a key pair. This is very similar to SSH keys in how we communicate and how we send secrets back and forth in encryption in general, right? Like we have a private key that is used to generate some message with an encrypted value, or signing a value is being sent back and forth. The public key can be used to decrypt that, but only if it's been signed properly by the private key, right? It's a good explanation. That's all I wanted to get out of this article is, this is one of the things that you need to understand when someone says passkeys and you're implementing passkeys into your vibe-coded application. What is actually happening? What is the standard that we're trying to apply here? This is, you know, it comes from WebAuthn. It can be a little bit slow. There are gotchas to actually implementing this sort of an architecture because encryption takes a long time, right? Like it's a lot easier to send around a plain text string and do, you know, MD5 hashing against it, right? Like whatever. That's tongue in cheek. Please don't implement MD5 for password hashing. you need to understand what this is. And I love that there was actually somebody digging in 2026, giving an explanation of what passkeys actually are and how they operate. so that the next generation can understand this, right? And again, this article is not very long, but you know what you're storing when you store a passkey into, you know, LastPass or 1Password or whatever it is you're storing a private key that is used to encrypt and sign a secret that's being passed back and forth. That's all that it is. And that secret can change. It doesn't matter what it actually is, but it's validating that you are indeed who you say you are. Pretty simple concept when it comes down to it. But understanding how it actually works is what I wanted to get to there, right? And that's what spun me out into this. Are basics still a thing? Do we need to actually have that? I don't know. Any thoughts on that, Ken?
Yeah. I do think it's, I mean, like, yeah, because actually I was thinking back to some of the times at GitHub where I would, where did my like actual expertise shine? Because I was just thinking, sorry, this is going to be a little bit of a ramble, so just go with me on it. There were certain concepts, like how subdomains work under the hood, or like not how subdomain, how, yeah, kind of how do subdomains work, but you know, the various security implications that come along with just different things like sharing sessions and you know, subdomain hijacking and all kinds of various considerations, right? And especially I could think of like when we were doing the Code Spaces project, that was crazy because you really had to understand web specs very well to not create massive security problems for a lot of reasons. I mean, you're effectively running RC as a service in a browser. It's like, this is XSS, RC, and everything all in one as a service. So there's a lot of like, browser specs. Like, I will say that, of course, I'd always have to refresh, but I always knew like when I needed a refresh on a spec, like really go in the weeds, I always knew which spec to go to. I always kind of knew like where I just kind of knew like based off of understanding not just specifications, but like what have I seen before? What do I understand about the world of security? And then like kind of tying those together creatively to say, not just here's a one option, but here's multiple options and considerations. And if we do this, then this won't work, but this would work, this, that, and the other. And we had so many, and we always walked away like, you know, it wasn't endless debate. It was like, we've got to figure out today how we're going to do this thing. And I'm saying all this to say, like, that expertise, knowing, like, you're talking about WebAuthn here, but just knowing sort of those specifications, the security implications. Yeah, I guess just professionally understanding. I don't know if I'm sure that an agentic system at some point will be doing a lot of that work for us. But how do you know if it's going to get those things right? How do you know if the advice it's giving makes any sense? I mean, I do. Robert Hansen actually put out this article or like LinkedIn post yesterday talking about his concern where like people are kind of offloading their cognitive tasks completely and really blindly trusting. And I think there's a term for it. It's like cognitive something or other with AI. Where it's sort of like, I just trust it. It's fine. I'd rather actually just offload my thinking to an LLM system. It's like, well, that's gonna bite you in the butt if you don't have like if you don't know what's real and what's false, right? So like that's a lot of shit to basically say, yeah, I agree. You do have to still at the end of the day know some of these standards pretty well, understand security implications, because there's not gonna be something that just magically saves and does it right and saves you and, you know, like it's just fine out of the box. You're going to be the thing that is the safety guardrails to make sure that the magic box is producing correct magic and not correct magic.
Yep.
Wow, that's a lot of words to say that, but anyways.
No, but that's always kind of been our role as AppSec engineers and ProdSec engineers, is to, you know, understand how the system is put together in order to identify the edge cases and where the system fails and where the security controls fail. I mean, I'm really summarizing information security, like the industry as a whole, very generally, but that's what we do. We build tools that look for the edge cases. We build tools to abuse those edge cases to see how far we can go. And it's in the name of preventing nefarious individuals from doing the same thing and stealing money or stealing data or executing functionality or whatever it is, but that's always been our role. That does not change. So you still have to have that base level understanding. Right? So with that though, right, like, you know, if you need an article and needed to brush up on pass keys, there's one for you. There's a couple other articles. We'll send those out with the newsletter. Just interesting things that I saw over the past week that weren't necessarily AI related. But part of this is just, you know, was a call to myself as far as, are the basics still necessary? Are Crocs and socks still going to be a thing? It doesn't go away, right? Like, that's the conclusion that I've come to. So.
Amen. Amen. I still agree. Swinging back the other way when I'm like, okay, I can see through the fog of what this last 6 months or nearly 6 months has looked like. I can finally see the other side of it. And things are shaking out. Thankfully, there's some common sense returning. I thought it was going to happen eventually. I know that it mentioned a bunch of times, like, look, people are going to try this stuff. They're going to understand its limitations, this, that, and the other. We'll start to have like a better sense. And actually, this is what I put in the blog that I keep teasing. But I said, like, the crazy part about the era that we're in right now is that we are building processes and we're building standards. And I say we as like software engineering in general, right? Or even you could just say engineering in general, I guess, like including infrastructure or whatever. We're building standards around systems that are still being built. They're still in flux. Like, it was, oh, we're going to secure with rules. And then like rules suddenly became not so much a thing as like skills. And then, well, for a while their MCPs were this big, big, massive thing. And it's like, oh, that's the next thing. And it's like, no, like it keeps changing. It keeps iterating. So we're building these, you know, top 10 stand, like on the security side, we're building top 10 standards. We're building, you should secure your environment using this. People are giving talks on it. And I'm like, I don't know if anybody should, because like we might need another couple of years of people actually like doing stuff day to day before we have enough data and enough things have kind of settled for us to be like, okay, we actually know what the hell we're talking about and actually like have good, you know, durable processes and guardrails and all those kind of things. I don't know. Historical knowledge of failures equals trauma. Yeah.
Yes.
ICQ again. Here's the historical knowledge.
Yeah. Failure cases. Yep. Awesome. Well, good. Thanks for letting me rant today. Thanks for listening, and being the community that you are. You guys make it all worth it. We'll continue the conversation. Let us know what you're running into, right? Because I do feel like the bottom half of the market has kind of just disappeared and no one knows where to go, if not even more than that. So there needs to be a presence of, hey, this is still a thing, right? Like, we are, this is still a requirement as we move forward. The stuff that we do is still important. It's just, it's going to look a little different. So keep your heads down. You'll make it, or heads up, whatever you want to say.
I would agree.
Cool. Yeah. You're golden on the job.
Yeah, I mean, awesome. I'll just sort of
here
real quick. The one thing I will say too is like, if since our original mission with this podcast was to sort of help show, like, through more veteran senior conversations and talking to various folks and hearing their journey and how they got to where they're at and what they do for a living and all that, one of our big goals for the podcast was like to help people get either into the industry or accelerate their journey within our industry. So to that end, I would say, like, if you want a cheat code, if you want to level up, learn, because it's not that hard anymore. It used to be like, oh my God, it used to be so tough to train and blah, blah, blah. There's tooling, there's easier ways to learn now. So learn some level of reinforcement learning, what I really mean is learn to tune LLMs a bit. If you have some even basic levels of security knowledge, but you can pair that with being able to do some level of tuning and training with an LLM, like I promise you, that's gonna be huge. If you learn the things that Ben Gittins, we had talked about that Ben Gittins discussed, and we have a screenshot that I can't pull up right now. But if I could, I would send it. it's really great. It shows all the different components of things you need to learn, like you talked about reverie, like long memory context management. So just going to plug that, Seth, because I feel like people need to know that that's like a shortcut, a cheat code. If you have that skill set, you're going to be in demand.
Yep. It goes back to like the Crocs and socks, right? Like the basics of, okay, security, the basics of application security, but also the basics of what's becoming, you know, AppSec in AI, right? That you should understand how it's actually implemented. So come learn with us, right? Like that's one of the things that we're trying to teach people. We're trying to share that knowledge. Yeah, appreciate everyone. I think that's where we'll call it for today. If you need a invite to Slack, please reach out on LinkedIn or via Seth or Ken at apps@appsec.com. We will send you an invite. I think that's everything. Anything else you wanted to bring up, Ken?
Thank you. Yeah, just thank you guys. Thank you, folks.
Okay. All right. See everybody next week. Thanks.